Can you call him again? I really, really promised to eat all the porridge. I'll run and do it now. Please.
I will call him again tomorrow for sure. You can run around all you like then. Now he's tired and has gone to sleep. That's dragons for you. When they get tired, they go straight to bed. And that wasn't the present. I'll give you the present tomorrow. So run along and eat your porridge. You promised.
Can I eat the porridge tomorrow?
Clowder looked pitifully at his mother.
No, you can't. Either the porridge and the dragon, or nothing. That's final. Aw,
life really can be so cruel and unjust. Such utterly disagreeable constraint on your behalf, mother,
sighed Clowder and trudged off to the house. Where did he pick up words like that?
Don't listen to him. He's read all those words in a book and still doesn't really know their meaning,
said Elizabeth, fixing her hair, when Clowder disappeared in the house.
Is it true about the dragon? Will he come tomorrow, too?
Of course. I keep my promises. I haven't forgotten that I promised to look into who's been scratching the gates, either. Elizabeth noticeably started. Her eyes grew shifty, and, glancing from side to side, she asked,
Perhaps you shouldn't? Who cares about some kids fooling around? Maybe you should leave off your nocturnal village walks. Not much point.
I would never go back on my word. And now, excuse me, I need to go and make a present for your son. Promises have to be kept. The landlady took a breath and was about to stop me, but restrained herself. I could clearly see that she wanted to say something, but decided not to drag the information out of this demonologist. All was clear to me already. She was going through the inner struggle between attractiveness and her main mission. For now, the mission is winning. If she comes and confesses all before the week is out, I'll have a think about what's to be done with her. I sat on the bed, took out the marble I gathered at the mine and my jeweler's kit, and entered the design mode. The idea for the present was simple. Since Clowder loves his Tiny Tim so much, I'll try to carve a dog figurine for him out of marble. What if it came out well? It'll do me good and will make the lad happy. Replicating a piece of marble in the design interface, I began to create an image of a dog. Looks like making an image of a living being from memory isn't all that simple. When I was making the cursed chess pieces, I had the holograms of the players, and it was much easier. For a long time, Tiny Tim didn't want to come out right. Either the head was wrong or his legs too short. I had no time restriction on being in Beatwick, so I wasn't too worried about how long it might take me to create the dog. Time and again I created and removed the image of Tiny Tim from my memory until a certain attempt came out perfect. It was him, the meter-high wolfhound, gentle and fluffy, as the dog was in his virtual life. I combined it with the model of the marble and opened my eyes to be surprised with a stream of messages. Damage taken. Hit points reduced by 24. 304, cursed dog aura, minus 280, magic resistance. Total hit points, 2,396 of 2,420. Skill increase, plus 1 to jewel craft, total 23. Plus 1 to crafting, total 5. What the? I lowered my gaze and saw this thing. A small marble statuette of a dog. But this was no normal dog. I was looking at the muzzle of a vicious dog, drooling with bared teeth, with a spiked collar, rabid eyes, and flaking skin that had ribs poking out of it in places. The statuette looked hideous. What about its properties? Cursed dog. Description.
Hatred and pain turned the gentle house pet into an embodiment of horror. Fear finished off the job, and now the dog hates everything that lives, everything which still contains a speck of kindness. 350 dark magic damage inflicted on all light beings in the radius of 10 meters once every 5 seconds. Attention, this item cannot be repeated. There is no recipe. You created a unique item. Your reputation with all previously encountered factions has fallen by 100. Your reputation with Cartus has increased by 100. You have received the title The Cursed Artificer, Level 2. The strength of negative effects has increased by 10%.
To hell with all this! I quickly opened the reputations table and saw that my standing with the Malabar Emperor had returned to zero. If not for the daily increase, the reputation with the Shaman Council would have even gone into the negative. Why in the hells did I create this thing? I took out my portable anvil, put the statuette on it, and, taking a good swing with the hammer, destroyed my creation. Another characteristic of the creator. No one besides the person who made it was able to damage the item, let alone destroy it. Hanging on to such a wonder was out of the question. Objects like these had to be destroyed right away, where possible. I had no desire whatsoever to become the second Dark Lord.
You have destroyed a cursed object. Your reputation with all encountered factions has increased by 100. Your reputation with Cartus has fallen by 100.
Oof! I breathed a sigh of relief. Then I double-checked that my reputation with the Emperor had also been restored, just in case, and started to think. So, in some incomprehensible way, I created something completely ghastly, something that I had no intention at all of creating. After destroying it, I recouped my losses and even made some gains, leveled up in crafting and jewelcraft. But the inability to control what I was making was very worrying. I entered the design mode and called up the image of Tiny Tim. Now, after it had already been created, this happened almost instantly. A normal, gentle, fluffy dog. Where was my mistake? I didn't get it. I had to try once again, but this time I would be creating a rose. Exiting the design mode and taking out another piece of marble, I began to create a rose. With a recipe, it was quick. 1, 2, and done. What did we have?
Cursed rose. Description. Hatred and anger created this flower.
After restoring my reputation via the same method, I sat on the bed. At least with using a known recipe, I didn't gain another rank in Cursed Artificer, although my jewelcraft didn't go up either, but that didn't matter. I needed to understand what happened to me. Why could I only make cursed things? Was this because of my title? There was only a small chance of it coming into play during item creation. It wasn't a simple process, however. But now I'm churning out cursed items one after the other. What the heck? But what about... I took out the malachite I got in Dolma and began to create for the third time. Something told me that the issue wasn't with me, but with the material I was using to make things. Right. What should I make? A rose or Tiny Tim? No point wasting materials. The dog it is. Either way, I'll get to the bottom of this.
The Happy Hound. Description. Love and friendship surround this wolfhound. Recipe created. Wolfhound statuette.
The statuette did not have any positive stat bonuses, but I didn't care. The main thing was that I was still able to create normal items. Gradually, I began to understand the principle behind the creation of cursed objects. I shook out the contents of my bag on the bed and started to go through all the rings I created while I was in Beatwick. This ring is from the copper I mined in Pryke, a normal ring with positive stat bonuses. But this bronze ring had some of the local tin in it. Aside from positive stats, it had another interesting feature. -10% to experience gain. Great. I looked through all the rings and set aside 42 rings, which reduced the gain rate of experience, stamina, energy, and other stats. Even their description was appropriate. Wrathful ring of something or other. So it looks like I couldn't make anything from these materials, since there was always a chance of such surprises. I looked again at the shattered marble remains of the destroyed objects. Phew. So, things weren't all that bad. I took out another piece of marble and made use of the Essence of Things ability. I wanted to see what this piece of marble wanted to be. At first, there was silence, which many stones had when they didn't want to be anything other than a stone. But then I was engulfed by a wave of hatred, disgust, and revulsion. And all of this came from an ordinary piece of marble. So it looked like this piece of stone wanted to be a cursed object. It mattered little the actual shape it took. But why? After coming to a decision, I opened the spirit summoning mode, cleared one slot, and started to summon spirits. Right now, I needed a spirit which would allow me to contact Kornik. He was the only one who could explain to me what to do with all this. I waved away messages telling me I had access to various types of spirits and stubbornly summoned one spirit after another. No, not that one. It's a different one I need. It grew dark outside, but I continued to summon, looking for the spirit I was after. Am I a shaman or what? Do you wish to add the spirit of air communication to the free slot? Finally! I almost despaired and wanted to stop the summons, but my inborn stick-to-itiveness would not allow me to quit this hopeless business. Attention! The summoning of the air communication spirit cannot be interrupted. Because this type of spirit is beyond your rank, each minute your hit points will be reduced by 5%. +2 to spirituality. Total 3. That 5% wasn't much of a worry. I cannot die in any case, even if I tried to summon Kornik for eternity. So, here we go. I have to find out what's going on here. Kamlani continued for exactly a minute, up until the point the first 5% of life dropped into oblivion. The pain was so great that I gave an involuntary shout, interrupting the sending of the spirit. Getting in touch with Kornik was going to be no simple matter. Not at all how I imagined it. After catching my breath and restoring my hit points, I returned to my exercise in masochism. From my sixth attempt, I was able to fully concentrate and ignore jolts of pain, as well as register an increase in my endurance. 5 minutes, 10, 20 had gone by, but Kornik remained out of reach. Did he fly off to the dragons again?
Who?
A desperate scream of pain, anger, and suffering sounded in my head. Contact! Teacher, this is Mayan. I have a question.
Run, you fool! Run! No!
Kornik's choking scream struck me like a bolt from the blue. Teacher?
Greetings, Mayan. I really have heard so much about you.
A suave male voice barged into my conversation with the teacher.
Let me introduce myself. My name is Garanika. Right now, Kornik is my guest, so he's not really free to speak. And I will do my best to make sure he is unable to do so for the upcoming eternity.
Kornik is with you? I asked, stunned, continuing to concentrate on the summoning as another pang of pain hit me. "Of course he is. I always finish what I start. Remember this. I sense pain. What a pleasant feeling. Suffering, hatred, fear. Soon we shall meet, and I will show you all the beauty of Cartus. But right now, you deserve to be punished. No one dares to break into my fortress in such a stupid manner. Goodbye, Mayen. I believe that after feeling this slight discomfort, you will see that it is better to join up with me." Garenika said something, and I was surrounded by another wave of pain. For crying out loud, my endurance had already reached level 132, and I was supposed to be feeling 26% less pain. But what I was going through now was quite unimaginable. I immediately remembered the little turtle chewing on me. This pain was on par with that, and for some reason my eyes were really burning, too. At last, I mercifully sank into darkness as I lost consciousness.
"Mayen, wake up!"
Elizabeth's voice was like a ray of light in endless pitch black. I didn't feel the pain anymore, so I lifted myself on my elbows and looked around. I don't get it. Why are my landlady's words the only ray of light? Why am I surrounded by darkness? Although, no, it wasn't total darkness. The indicators for the buffs and debuffs hadn't gone anywhere, shining brightly in their usual place. Right, I don't think I've had this particular debuff before.
Blindness. Debuff duration, 3 days.
3 days in darkness? Great. Could this debuff be taken off somehow?
Mayen, your eyes!
I heard Elizabeth's surprised voice. What about them?
You don't have any.
My landlady was trying hard not to let her voice slide into screaming, but there were notes of panic breaking through. I felt the empty eye sockets with my hands. Crazy stuff. There's no removing a debuff like that. I'll have to spend the entire 3 days in darkness. Don't worry. I'll be back to normal in 3 days' time. Can you tell me what happened?
We were getting ready for bed and then heard your scream. It was so full of pain and agony that we ran straight to you. Then the scream stopped, as if you were smothered by it. I entered the house and saw you on the floor. I called you, and you woke up. Ah, your face is all covered in blood.
I just about managed to calm my landlady down, wash my face, and go to bed. 3 days in darkness is just too much. I was hoping to spend them productively, but now it looks like I'll be stuck in the room the entire time. Damn! If I ever catch Garenika, I'll give him a piece of my mind. With that thought, I drifted off. The next morning I could think clearly again and tried to analyze recent events. Cornick was Garenika's prisoner. My teacher was out of the picture. A pity. He was one funky goblin, despite all his foibles. Garenika knows about me and has promised that we will meet again. I'm really not liking this. I'm not a great fan of the idea of meeting up with a mentally unstable NPC who could resort to using force at any moment. Why on earth has he turned up? It's not like I don't have enough problems of my own to be thinking about this creep as well. The other bad news was that the spirit I summoned took off a lot of hit points, and that Garenika used it to blind me. Even if this was temporary, it was far from pleasant. To put it plainly, my attempt to find out why the resources gathered in Beatwick produced cursed items led to my being blinded. A total fail. After spending half the day in bed, I realized that if I continued like this, I would go mad. The darkness, with burning pictograms and the hushed silence of the courtyard, where everyone was trying to be quiet so as not to disturb the sick, were not exactly cheering. I had to keep myself busy somehow, or I would start to howl out of frustration. I tried to summon spirits and contact Almas to tell him about Cornick, but that came to nothing. I simply couldn't see the panel with the spirits. Could my eyes work in the design mode, at least? Let's check it out. Praise be to all the game developers, the design mode came with its own vision. That meant I had a way to keep myself busy. I grabbed a piece of something at random, really hoping it was either malachite or lapis lazuli. As I created the object, I was glad to see that it was lapis. It was sent to me by Hellfire, so I could easily make something out of it. Without worrying, I'd turn out another piece of evil junk. Only one question remained. What could I make? The dwarves? Why not? Someone will have to make them anyhow. Might as well be me. I decided to use Eric as my prototype. I could have used Hellfire, too, especially since his image had already been created, but I didn't like the guy. And if I didn't like him, the probability that I would come out with something horrible was quite high. I needed the dwarf warriors. Eric, the dwarf who didn't betray me in my hour of need, didn't fall for Phoenix's bribes, gathered everyone together and is stubbornly waiting for me to get to Anhur's. Honest, loyal, and level-headed. A real dwarf. He popped up in the design mode of his own accord. Now I could modify him. A sword, a shield, a helm. Arg, that's not it. The great dwarf warriors didn't look like that. Why didn't I ask Hellfire for their appearances and the descriptions of their feats? It just wasn't working with standard weapons. I needed help.
Man, I brought you some food. You should eat.
Elizabeth brought me back to the blackness outside by touching my shoulder. I quickly glanced at the debuff timer. It's been 10 hours. Time sure ran fast in the design mode.
Yes, thank you. Elizabeth, can I ask you something? You can call me Beth. No need to be so formal. Do ask, of course.
I almost choked, getting a muffled laugh from my landlady. Beth had decided we should be on familiar terms. This could only mean one thing. The level of attractiveness has reached the coveted 80 points. I'd better watch out, or she'll start making advances. Do you know the stories of the dwarf warriors from the Carmondant chess set?
Of course. Do you want to know them all, or one in particular?
Anyone would do. I need to understand the logic of how they made it into the history books.
Then I will tell you about Borg Goldhand. His story is the most exemplary.
I got comfortable and turned into one big ear, listening to bedtime, or whatever time of day this was. Stories is always interesting. Only one thing bothered me. As soon as I get my sight back, I'll have to catch Beth and stop her from summoning her demon. A pity. Just when we started to get on so well.
All of this happened very long ago.
My landlady began the tale.
When the dwarves lived in the cramped caves of the Rurat Mountain.
Borg! Sledgehammering damnation! Where are you going?
A stocky, practically square dwarf, his eyebrows in a frown, watched Borg going down into the depths of the Black Maw Chasm. In the many centuries of his people's history, no one had yet succeeded in descending below the level of darkness, to the place where the throne torches could not drive back the black and show what the gloomy haze concealed. The daredevils who went below this fateful threshold never returned. Those who went down on a rope were lifted back up with eyes full of terror. Dead eyes. And now another young fool had decided to explore the secret of the chasm without a rope, trusting only in the strength of his hands and the innate agility of the Undermountain people.
"Father, I'll be quick. I have to find out what is concealed by the darkness. What kind of a chief would I be if my subjects end up laughing at me my entire life? Our people need knowledge, and I will gain it for them."
"Fool! If you make it back, I'll beat you like a drunken mule, whatever that means."
Although he was very worried for his son, the chief was a proud dwarf. For 3,000 years now, the dwarves had to reconcile themselves to the fact that their mountains had an incomprehensible area where no one could go. And now his son and only heir was daring to do what even the bravest dwarven warriors were too afraid to do— descend into the Black Maw.
"Father, if I do not return, tell Talisha that Borg Serganius is afraid of nothing in this world."
Giving a farewell glance to his father, the young dwarf disappeared into the impenetrable dark.
"Arg! Helza!"
The chief threw his axe down in anger, but immediately picked it up. A dwarf without an axe and a pick is no dwarf at all. This would mean shame for the rest of his life. But that Bran was something else. Got his daughter to egg his son on to go down into the Black Maw, right to his death. And how did he come to allow this? He thought the youngsters were just playing around and that their father's problems didn't bother them. But no... they saw and noticed everything, those sharp-eyed kids. Could this stupid 100-year-old dispute now lose him his son? 2 hours went by, but the gloomy veil of darkness remained undisturbed. His son did not return. The father flicked away a tear and headed back to the settlement. He was the chief, and it was his duty to look after the people. He had no right to show any weakness, or he would face an immediate challenge from his rivals. But why were his feet so treacherously weak, and why did tears keep trying to return to his eyes?
"So, where is our weakling?"
At the entrance to the settlement, the chief was met by Bran's mocking grin. Compared to his peers, Borg really did look more of a gnome. Almost a head shorter than the others and narrow-shouldered, he ate less and was constantly busy thinking or doing something. He had even started to visit the exiled smiths, trying to fathom their secrets. Borg was interested in everything. With a sole exception, he was not a warrior. Everything that was connected with weapons, blood, or killing fell outside his sphere of interests.
"So, he's finally decided to go the way of dog food, eh? Ha ha ha!"
Only his willpower, forged in his many years of ruling, stopped the chief from attacking Bran. He was right, after a fashion. There was no place for weaklings among the dwarves. The fact that Borg had survived until he was 20 could only be called a miracle and was due to his own will as the chief. Sooner or later he was going to run out of luck, and that black day had finally come. According to tradition, the wake for his son took place 5 days after his death. It was not a very big gathering. Borg didn't have any friends, only close relatives. To everyone's surprise, Talisha came, dressed in white, the color of death, as a sign of solidarity.
"Today we have gathered to celebrate Borg's return to our forefathers. Let us make merry and dance, showing how we mourn the departed,
the chief addressed the gathering.
"Borg was a good dwarf, even a somewhat unusual one, but..."
"Chief!"
An out-of-breath guard burst into the hall.
"Why did you leave your post?"
The head of dwarves frowned.
"Chief! Borg is coming!"
Not believing his own ears, the chief ran out of the hall and immediately half-covered his eyes. The caves in which the dwarves lived could not be called dark, but there was never enough light there. And now, from the direction of the Black Maw, a bright sun was moving towards the settlement, decimating the centuries-old twilight of the caves. When the chief's eyes got used to the bright light, he saw that the sun wasn't moving of its own accord, but was carried in the hands of a painfully familiar-looking dwarf. Narrow shoulders, short stature, Borg had returned. Overcome with joy, the father rushed towards his son, but only a few dozen steps away, he froze in his place. It was his son, but at the same time it was a stranger. The dwarf's once naive eyes now shone with great wisdom. Despite the unsteady step of the tired-looking figure, it was clear that a lord was now walking through the stone caverns. The black hair of a youth had turned into silver locks of an old man, and the bright sun in his hands turned out to be an ordinary hammer.
"Father!"
Borg's thunder-like voice echoed through the cave.
"I found out what lay hidden in the darkness. We should not be afraid of it."
"Son!"
The leader didn't know if he should rejoice or not. So great was the change. Was it his son that returned?
"Father, I have changed. We have to change if we want to survive. At the bottom of the chasm there lives, I don't know what to call it, there lives a something very ancient and wise. It has been watching us for a long time. When a dwarf descends to it, it shows him what would happen to our people if we continue down the path of war and violence. Father, we will die out. We have to change. Those that dwell under the mountains have to become master craftsmen, and I will do everything in my power to make this happen."
"Ah, the weakling's back."
Bran appeared next to the rejoicing crowd of Borg's relatives.
"Father, don't!"
shouted Talisha, but the old dwarf ignored her.
"Douse your torch, you pipsqueak, or I'll shove it down your throat. You're disturbing my sleep."
"How dare you?"
The chief was incensed, but Borg interrupted him.
"Leave him, father. Those like him are dragging the dwarves back into the jaws of anger and violence. We can be warriors, but we have to be craftsmen first. He cannot understand this. He is too weak."
"What?"
roared Bran.
"You called me a weakling? You? In the name of our ancestors, I challenge you to a duel, right now. You won't come back to life a second time."
Not waiting for the youth to reply, Bran grabbed his axe and hacked at him from above. Or rather, he wanted to hack at him, because at the last instant the shining hammer flew up, blocking the hit, and then came down on the attacker's head, flattening it. A silence filled the caves. The elvish armor, which Bran had bought for a great heap of gold coins, and which was considered the strongest armor in Barleona, was flattened with one quick hit from a weak dwarf.
"Before a dwarf can become a warrior, he first needs to become a master."
Borg's voice thundered through the caverns.
"I became a master when I forged this hammer. The wise being helped me, and from now on darkness holds no danger for those who want to embark upon the path of the masters. But any who desire strength alone, it is best for them not to descend there. They would not return. From this day on, I, Borg Serganius, will lead the dwarves on the path of master craftsmanship."
Borg kept his promise. Just 100 years later, dwarves had turned into unsurpassed masters in smithing, having far overtaken the elves in this art. All the ancient great masters of the Undermountain people are represented in the Carmandont set. Each of them created at least one shining object, all of which, together with Borg's hammer, form the legendary Radiant set. 8 shining items. A dwarf wearing it could become a paladin, irrespective of his class.
It was a beautiful story. During Elizabeth's tale, I felt that I was standing next to the chief when Borg descended into the chasm, mourned the dead with the others in the dwarvish manner, and squinted at the bright light of the hammer. But straight away I had questions. Who was in the chasm? Who was hiding behind the darkness? And where is that set of gear now?
I have no answer to that. After the numbers of dwarves grew and they abandoned the Roret Mountain, there was an earthquake. The city under the mountain, almost empty by that time, was completely destroyed, together with the Black Maw. Whoever it was concealing remains a secret of the ancient masters of the Undermountain people, a secret that no one has yet discovered. That was also the time when the radiant gear of the dwarves was lost. It was kept in the central building of the settlement, and when the roof began to cave in, there was no time to take it out. The king under the mountain, a vassal of our emperor, periodically sends free citizens to search for it, but this has so far been fruitless. I don't know if this would disappoint you or not, but the king only sends dwarves for this. This is not a path that can be taken by members of other races.
Hang in there, Eric. When you get to level 100, you have some difficult searching ahead of you.
Thank you, Beth. You were of great help. Now I understand everything.
The next morning had a productive start. First of all, I called over Clowder and gave him his present, which made him explode with joy. Then summoned Draco and sent them both to play in the courtyard. Let the lad level up my dragon. It's useful for me and a joy for him. At level 17, my totem could stay out for 3 hours, and by the time that had run out, I planned to have my totem returned to me with at least 25 levels in him. After this noisy crew ran off to the yard, I entered the design mode. I now knew what the dwarf warriors should look like, although it wasn't right to call the great masters warriors. But if that's the way Carmandont saw them, he must have had his reasons. Eric's image appeared in the darkness of the design mode. I removed his pick, but after some thought brought it back, fixing it on his back and adding a double-handed axe next to it. You can't have a dwarf without one. Now, to create Borg from this, I had to make Eric more narrow and short and thin out his beard a little. An apron, that's another thing that's missing. And his face is a little covered in soot, and the gloves on his hands, and burn marks on his boots, and... There were many other ands. When I finished correcting Eric, he looked nothing like the dwarf that I knew. I made 8 copies of the figure and was about to exit the design mode when something stopped me. The figurines looked alike, but it would have been wrong to make 8 Borgs. The system may not accept the result, and I would fail to make the dwarf warriors. I need to give them some distinct features, something that would make each master recognizable. But what? The answer came of itself. The Radiant set. Each of the dwarves created an object from that set, so if this one is given the hammer, and this one the braces, and this one the shield... When I finished giving out the items, without even knowing if they actually existed or were the fruit of my fevered imagination, I was completely satisfied with the result. Even if the dwarves had similar looks, the different shining objects made them unique. I decided not to worry about how I would represent this light in stone for now. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Man, why aren't you calling Draco? It's been 2 days already.
Clowder's disappointed voice brought me back to reality. I opened my eyes and looked around. What did he mean, not calling for 2 days already? The lad, head hanging low, was standing a couple of steps away from me. Do you mean? I was about to ask, but stopped just in time. I saw Clowder, which could mean only one thing. The blindness debuff had expired. In other words, my eyes grew back. The 2 days flew by as if they never happened.
Oh, you can see already. I really didn't believe you would,
fired off Clowder, looking up at me.
So, will you summon Draco? We haven't finished playing from last time.
Of course, I'll call him now, I replied dully, immersed in my own thoughts. I created the figurines. Now I just had to embody them in lapis. If I remembered right how things went with the orcs, sculpting takes place at the rate of one figurine a day. I will need around 8 days dedicated only to the crafting of the figurines. Does this mean I can kiss goodbye to leveling up? I think not. I had to increase my levels. The figurines can wait. They won't go anywhere. I called over Draco and was about to go and have some food when my gaze fell on the totem's level. It was 32, and Draco had turned from a half-a-meter-long serpent into a meter-long dragon. At this rate, he'd reach the necessary level in just a couple of weeks. I selected Draco and opened his properties. Holy cow! His settings! I could change his settings! Barely restraining myself, knowing that I had to go and level up, I sent the kids back to play. Still, my hands were sure itching to look around the properties and settings and see what could be changed, corrected, or selected. 3 hours of walking around the woods brought me little joy. There were no wolves or goblins. The region seemed to lack any creatures altogether. It's like they all died out. I spent the rest of the day working a marble vein, bringing my mining up to level 33 and increasing strength and stamina by 1. A little more, just a little, and I could offer to mine Slate's iron vein for him. I thought the smith would agree. What difference is it to him who gathers his materials? Towards the end of the day, I paid a visit to Tisha and made arrangements for the evening. We had plans for a rambling excursion to hunt down the mist monster. I decided not to tell them about Beth. First, I'll catch her and have a chat with her, and only then decide what to do next. I decided not to put the trap up near the house. If I caught my landlady right by the front door, she could say that she was just going for a walk, and I, that good-for-nothing, was hindering her in that. Instead, I went straight to the cemetery and set everything up right in front of the entrance. Now, any creature of level 150 inclusive is as good as caught. When darkness descended on Beatwick, there came the sound of steps. Lighting her way with a candle, Beth carefully made her way to the cemetery. So then, why her? Why does she need to summon this horror on the village? Is it revenge against the headman? That's simply daft. Perhaps it's... Oh! Like a fly caught in the web, Beth was being encased in the bone trap. Suddenly, the night was shaken by her scream.
Man, don't! Stop! You don't know what you're doing! Really!
The bone trap had reached her head, and Beth's shout was cut off. I waited for a couple of minutes, making sure that the prison was holding my landlady securely, and went back to Beatwick. The time had come to tell Tisha that there won't be any beast tonight. After a dozen steps, I stopped, Or rather, I was stopped by two red eyes and mist covering the monster from every side. What the? Didn't I catch Beth before she summoned you? Where did you come from? The hot breath of the beast could be felt even a meter away. After standing for a few seconds next to me, a moment later it shifted to the cocoon containing Beth. Having circled it, the monster lifted its misty head and the hairs on my back stood up. The beast was laughing, a malevolent, satisfied laugh. It was sentient. It was no demon. It was something else.
Yes!
A triumphant, squeaky voice with metallic notes in it shook the night. It can speak, too. What the heck is this?
2 years! 2 years I could not destroy her! The master was growing very displeased. Thank you, shaman. You helped! For that, I will send you to the Greylands without pain. Master will rejoice!
I had no time to respond. When the beast jumped to me, there came the flash of its claws, and a moment later the world was gone. There was one small comfort. The beast told no lie. There really was no pain this time, at least of the physical kind.
In connection with your death, your level of experience has been reduced by 30%.
I'll start losing levels at this rate. Bright sunshine lit the bone trap that blocked the entrance to the cemetery. And what will I say to Beth now?
Quick! There may still be time to stop them!
Strange shouts came from the direction of Beatwick.
Did you see? They turned into goblins, dark ones!
We have to send a messenger to Fosted. How will we survive without the herd?
What's with the guards? Still alive?
Alive, thank the gods. Where have they taken the herd?
What happened with the neighbors? Did you see how they changed? What if they turn into goblins, too?
Right. Something happened in the village. By the looks of it, something unpleasant. Did goblins attack and chase away the herd? I have to find Tisha and find out. But first, Beth.
Ease me!
The woman finished her shout as soon as the trap fell apart.
Is it day already?
Beth looked around, rather lost, and then started to scream at me again.
What have you done?
Beth, let me explain.
I'm no Beth to you. Forget that name. Happy now, demon fighter? Thanks to you, darkness has come to our village.
What are you on about? Shouts kept coming from the direction of Beatwick. Beth was silent for a few moments, listening to them. Then her eyes narrowed, and she looked at me angrily.
Last night, 3 families from our village turned into dark goblins, 6 adults and 7 children. Was that your aim when you hunted me? Well, you can be happy now. You got what you wanted.
What are you on about? Beth, I don't get you.
Don't you dare use that informal tone with me, boy. For 2 years, I protected our village from a dark curse. Only thanks to me are the residents of the village still human. But you went and with a wave of your hand brought it all to naught. Who are you? Did the Dark One send you?
I don't understand what you're talking about. Elizabeth took several deep breaths, calming down, and then continued in a distracted tone.
2 years ago, straight after the death of my husband, someone began to put a curse on the village. At first, its weakest residents had succumbed to it. You saw them. They resembled apes, but are still human. When they became incapable of work that required any thinking, they were sent to cut the grass. They aren't capable of doing anything more demanding than that. I thought it strange that 3 families started to deteriorate at once, so I decided to put a blessing on the village every week. It helped. The villagers and their animals stopped changing, but gradually the land itself began to change. It became cursed. I wrote to everyone I could think of, but no one replied to my letters. I warned the headman, but he only promised to look into it, and no more. I wanted to go to the town myself, but the ban, it's not about me now. For 2 years I stood in the path of darkness, despite the attacks of the Mist Beast. And today, in one go, you destroyed everything I worked so carefully to preserve. 3 households have vanished from the face of Beatwick, and the residents of the others have begun to turn into goblins. All because of you. Do you understand now what you have done? Why didn't you tell me anything? I would have helped you. And who are you? A sleek favorite of the Herald? How can you help me in protecting the village? Besides, how did I know who it was that the headman, only good for empty promises of help, sent to my house? There is no one I can trust. Even my workers, I had to hire in Anhurs and bring them all the way here. Without an amulet, I cannot discover who it is, but I know that a dark one resides in Beatwick. It could be anyone, even you. But I only... Enough! I forbid you to enter my house. I forbid you to speak to my children. I forbid you to even so much as look in my direction. I cursed the moment I agreed to take you into my house.
Elizabeth turned around and went to the village, and a very interesting message hung before my eyes.
Your reputation with the priestesses of Goddess Iluna has fallen by 1,000 points. Current level, mistrust. You are 1,000 points away from the status of neutral.
Goddess Iluna, the head of Barleona's pantheon, who are staunch enemies of Cartus. And now I have mistrust with her priestesses. I don't think I feel so good. Chapter 10. Just when you thought things couldn't get any worse.
Tisha, can you tell me what happened here?
After pulling myself together, I returned to the village, where I immediately came across Tisha. She and other villagers were busy trying to fix the gate. At the moment, it was completely ripped out and lying in a ditch.
"Mayan, I'm sorry. I really don't have time now,"
she quickly said as she rushed around.
"Hold the pole. Begin attaching it now. 1, 2.
Seeing that I wasn't going to get anywhere with the headman's daughter right now, I went over and helped to fix the fallen gate. Judging by the damage, it had been broken open from the inside. When the gate had been returned to its place and a couple of carpenters were starting to get it back into shape, I tried to speak to Tisha again.
"What happened here?" "Oof, that wore me out."
After wiping her brow and fixing her hair, the girl continued.
"No one knows what happened. This morning, members of 4 households suddenly turned into goblins. They let the entire herd out of the enclosure and drove it towards the exit. The stupid animals went in a straight line and took out the gates in their path. But the gates we can fix. The main problem is that we have no cows now. The entire 100-strong herd, which we so carefully protected from predators, was spirited away by 6 adult goblins in 5 minutes. It's enough to make you lose heart. How? How could they transform like that? It's impossible."
"Nothing is impossible in this world." The headman joined the conversation before I noticed him. "Mayan, I cannot send anyone after it. We are peaceful villagers, not warriors. Help us to get the herd back. The village won't survive without it."
"Quest available. Returning the herd.
Description. Beadwick villagers that turned into goblins have driven away a herd of cows. Catch up with them and bring back the cows. Quest type, scenario. Reward, variable depending on the degree of success. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest, variable depending on degree of failure.
I'll help you. I will run after and return the stolen herd right away. My jaw nearly hit the floor when I saw the conditions of the quest. Now you could be sure that the corporation had launched some sort of a scenario in Beatwick. But why here, right on the outskirts of the Empire? There are practically no players here. And it even came with a variable reward or penalty. It looks like a special imitator will be tracking the progress of this quest and will make a decision depending on my actions. What a lively neighborhood I'd ended up in. Can I have a horse? I would catch up with him faster this way.
Unfortunately, no. My sons galloped out of the village when it was still night, when we realized that the mist monster had disappeared. So you will have to go on foot. There are no other horses in the village.
The headman shrugged in dismay. There was no point in dropping by Elizabeth's place to pick up my things. After that incident in Pryke, when I was robbed by other prisoners, I carried everything with me. But when I'm back, I will certainly have a talk with Beth. I don't care if she forbade me to visit her. Attractiveness didn't go anywhere, only the reputation was reduced. It's time we had an honest heart-to-heart. I didn't get a message telling me I was barred from the house. That meant there was no risk of penalty. Moreover, I couldn't shake the feeling that the strange behavior of the priestess was scripted into the scenario. I took a deep breath and ran after the herd. The goblins were about 5 hours ahead of me, but they moved slowly, so catching up with them wasn't too hard. The main problem would be how to deal with the 6 newly hatched minions of Cartus. Nor should I forget about the 8 children. It's just, in the real world, children can't do anything. In Barleona, even a toddler with 100 levels would thump me into the earth all the way up to my ears. Running turned out to be surprisingly easy. Ever since I had replaced stamina rings with intellect rings, I'd had little cause to notice the energy decrease. It was always at the maximum, so at first I could maintain the speed of a good horse. However, after 20 minutes of running, I acquired a 23-hour buff, run-down horse, which slowed energy regeneration by 20%, while every 20 minutes this percentage consistently grew by the same 20%. This meant that by the end of the first hour of the run, I decided to stop and catch my breath. -60% to energy regeneration did not permit the rings to restore this stat in sufficient amounts. The upside was that I had already run quite a long distance and even gained an achievement.
Achievement earned. Runner, level 1. The running time without acquiring the run-down horse buff is increased by 25 minutes. The next level gained after the buff is incurred 9 times.
While I was running, I tried not to fill my head with too many thoughts. But now, as I dropped into a walk, questions began to arise in my mind. First, why didn't the goblins run for the freelands, where concealing the herd would have been much easier and there was plenty of space for Cartus forces to hide? Instead, they took the road that headed straight to Farstead. They turned off it from time to time, but always came back to it. Strange behavior from the freshly minted green minions. Have they started a migration to Cartus or something? They won't be able to just stroll through the Empire like that. They'll be caught at the nearest settlement with any players in it. I summoned Draco to keep me company. The last session with Clowder only raised my totem to level 36. Looks like the idea of leveling up the dragon with the help of the kid had played itself out. Draco was no longer a child, but a normal adolescent who would get bored with just running around the yard. What do teen dragons do? Who knows? I entered the spirit summoning mode and continued to go down the road, constantly hitting my tambourine. While my energy was being restored, I could